Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week, my guest is Warren Tuttle, the author of the new book, Inventor Confidential, and the former president of the United Inventors Association. Warren's helped launch numerous consumer products, resulting in over $1 billion in retail sales. So if you're sitting on a great idea, but you don't know what to do with it, help is on the way next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Warren, and welcome to Common Denominator.
Well, thanks, Moshe. Good to be here.
So take us back to the beginning of your adventure. What got you working in the space of inventions and with inventors?
I started many years ago as a retail department store buyer in Brooklyn, New York, at a store called Abraham & Strauss, which many of your listeners may not know of, but today it's part of Macy's. And I was a buyer in the housewares, cookware, and electrics arena. And I eventually left there, came to where I live today, Connecticut, started a number of gourmet cookware stores, sort of Williams-Sonoma type stores, started a cooking school, had a food catering business. And one day an inventor walked in and showed me a product called Misto, the gourmet olive oil sprayer. And I helped him take it to market, and we sold millions of units. It changed my whole life, and that's sort of what led me on the path to where I am today.
So after this point of having success with Misto, where'd you go from there?
I first got involved with a couple more inventors, had some moderately successful products, and then I made the mistake, Moshe, of thinking I knew everything, and I designed and developed my own product, which was a saucepan stirring device, which was could fit on any size pot and was adjustable, could help you do other tasks while things were stirring on the stove. And I put all my money into it, all my effort into it, and actually did quite well in the beginning, sold about 100,000 pieces, thought we were gonna do quite well. And then it didn't sell at retail. It was a complete bomb. None of the stores paid for it, none of the retailers. I learned a valuable lesson in life. I got out in front of the project. And it took me about 2 years to clean up the mess. And along the way, new other inventor who had a product called Smart Spin kept calling me. I kept putting him off. He kept calling me. I kept putting him off. And eventually, I cleaned up my old mess and went on, partnered with him to take out Smart Spin, which did quite well again. But that led me really to a reflection point of what am I doing? Where am I headed? And I took a little bit of time off, thought things out, and I decided that I wanted to go out and start what I call open innovation programs with companies. Sort of take my knowledge on the inventing side, take my knowledge with inventors, product development, and take those independent folks and hook them up with bigger companies.
When I think about being an inventor, I think it's the closest thing to being a kid, right? That creative ability. When I look at my 9 children, where their minds go when they play with their toys, and I think that's the coolest thing of what you do, the ability to be a kid and make a living doing that.
Well, there is a childlike feeling that comes from it. I agree with you. I also think that inventors are a lot like other creative folks, like artists, musicians, you know, authors. They're creating something from scratch. Inventors are a little bit more technical, have more of an engineering background, but are quite similar to all those. But it is a wonder. One of the things we need to do with kids is to take that energy and those thoughts and give them some constructive education so they can take those things and do something with them later in life. But I think that's a very true statement, what you just said.
So when you see in a type of invention, someone comes to you with invention, at this point, do you kind of know whether it's going to be a success or not?
Absolutely not. Sure. That's the quick answer. Let me give you the longer answer. First of all, Moshe, I stick to fields, industries that I am familiar with and have a lot of expertise in. So that's housewares, kitchen products. It's hardware, tools, It's things you see on direct response television. Those are areas of expertise for me. For instance, I'm not particularly good at exercise equipment or medical devices or that type of thing. So I stay within my realm. I know what I'm good at. And yes, when people bring me things in those arenas, I can vet them pretty quickly. I have a historical background of what's going on in the industries. I know what's been done before. I know a good idea from a bad one. Sure. Since I know how to cook, I know how to use a hammer, I know how to use other things. It's some of it's quite natural. But having said that, you never know. You think a product might be successful, and we certainly eliminate some of the losers. But until you test it and get that product out on the shelf, so you put a price point on it and someone hands over their hard-earned cash to you,
sure,
you're not entirely sure where you are on the project.
Yeah, because I always think about in the business sense, you want to go down to reality, right? To the, these type of products, right? You got to sell hundreds of thousands or if not millions of these products in order to be a success, because it takes money to make the product and market the product and bring the product all the way to the point where actually, it's a success. What do you see are the main kind of components in the practical, this kind of world of action till something's a success? What are the kind of the components of that?
Well, the first thing, you have to solve a problem. I mean, 90% of great products solve a problem, or they make life easier, or they bring some quality of life value, to you. But mostly they make things quicker and easier. You know, if you told me you invented a lawnmower, I'd probably yawn. If you told me it could mow my lawn in half the time at no extra cost, I might start get excited about it.
Sure.
And that's the thing. Does the product you're working on, does it do something substantially better than anything else on the market? Does it make someone's life easier? So that's where it starts. And then there's a whole lot of vetting. Yeah. Then is the idea a big enough idea to enough people, or are you just solving your own problem? You know, so many people bring me products that are important to them, but don't appeal to the greater masses. And you just made an excellent point. If you really want to be successful and you're licensing your product, you really have to sell at least in the hundreds of thousands, and you hope to get up in the millions. And that's where you make serious money. And a lot of inventors are just sort of satisfied selling 5,000 pieces and making $1,000 or $2,000, and that's they call it a day. I'm in a little different arena where I'm with you, brother. I want to find products that are selling in the hundreds of thousands or millions. So we're looking for something that has a broad-based appeal to a lot of people, not just a niche product.
Would you say anybody had come to you through the years and any products that ended up being a big success that you actually missed out on?
Well,
any of those?
That's a really good question. I only have one that I really regret. And that was a slicer that sliced hot dogs into smaller bites. And it was also in the shape of a dachshund dog, like a long dog. And when I looked at it, I thought it looked kind of goofy, but I didn't understand the real value, which you may is with nine children, my kids were grown, of slicing hot dogs because of how many kids choke on hot dogs not being sliced enough. And I didn't really recognize the problem, and I kicked myself for it because I didn't slow down and take the time to look at it carefully. And that product went on to sell millions of units with someone else. But other than that, I learned from that, and I don't think I've missed one since.
That's great. Again, another example where you've learned from something you've missed out on. I also know there's two sides of people that I've met. So there's like artistic, and I guess going into that box is the inventor. And then there's kind of the business, mathematical, organized type of person. So probably you've seen the inventor type in the business world. When you mix them together, sometimes they'll get taken advantage of.
Yes.
Is there any advice for that kind of inventor or artistic type of person, music or in movies, that advice that you would give them?
Absolutely spot on. I call it front of the house, back of the house. I call it like one person's the chef, one person's the maitre d', right? But to your point, the vast majority of inventors are creative. They have engineering and technical backgrounds. Most of them, as a rule, don't have business savvy or sense or experience. And you're 100% correct. They're really taken advantage of. And we have a whole industry that is cropped up of companies, individuals, submission corporations, coaches, coaching factories that all charge inventors up front because they've learned that if they partner with inventors, it's too risky. Only one out of, 100 may make it. And so there's not enough money on the backside to be profitable. And they realize that they need to charge the inventor up front. So then they start marketing to those inventors, telling them that there's gold mines around the corner and millions. This is a real pet peeve of mine and really upsets me a lot and why I don't, one of the reasons I don't charge inventors. But a lot of times inventors fall for it. So I write about it extensively in Inventor Confidential. Make sure that you do your research. If someone is charging you up front, find out a lot about them and not just what they're telling you. They're very, very, very clever at giving you only part of the story. You need to find out how many people have you coached, how many people have you worked with, how much revenue have you brought in, and how many of those people have had success, and what does success look like to them? I know one that I looked at recently that's coached over like 10,000 people, claims to have helped 200 people get to market. Well, first of all, it's only 2%. But then when I went through the list of things that got to market, a couple of them were my products and were complete bombs. So how many of them really made it? And by the way, I see them touting all the time inventors who sell like 4,000 or 5,000 pieces of something. And you know that the royalty payments are, a couple of grand. I mean, really, folks, is making a couple thousand dollars for all the work that you went through, is that what success looks like? Tell me not just that one person that made it, but tell me in aggregate, how much have people made? What are my odds of success? And really get an understanding. And so I lay out in my book, the 10 questions to ask before you jump into bed with anyone.
So Warren, if an inventor wants to pitch their product, what should they make sure is in their elevator pitch?
Well, elevator pitch is a great expression because that's the presuming you're with the president of the company and you have 30 stories, to go up in an elevator to say in New York City to describe, and that's his attention span of listening to you. The number one thing, Moshe, is the benefit statement. Nobody wants to hear about the materials. It's made of steel. It has this many RPMs, all the engineering stuff. They want to hear what's the benefit. For instance, the benefit statement of a car is if I have a car, I have the freedom to get around and I can go to the store when I want. Not I have a car because it has 400 horsepower and all-wheel drive, So focus on the benefit. Why is the number one thing is quickly get to the point of what's the benefit of your product? And then why does everybody need one? What makes yours better? You should be able to get that in within 30 seconds.
I was thinking to myself, I know we have the ability in the U.S. to patent different products, but in my mind, I was always thinking like maybe if you just tweak something a little bit, is it worth it? All the legal costs, because it's a very specialized legal process. So all the work that and time and energy and money that you spend to patent a product, and then the other question is, do you patent it in many countries? Do you spend the time, spend the energy, or just go out to market?
It depends upon your path to market. If you plan to license your product to a bigger company or an entity, patents become very important because they want some collateral. They want something physical. They want something that's more than an idea that they'll pay you 3%, 4%, 5% royalty for. And by connecting into your intellectual property, then their lawyers and so forth can defend that patent. And yes, can people get around it? Sure. But if you're is the best design and it's the best solution, then you have something worth protecting and that becomes quite valuable. If you're going to go to market on your own, you might consider skipping that process, but you have to be prepared that others, are going to jump in and follow you. And that certainly is a concern. As far as worldwide patents, there's enough business right here in America to not have to go around the world. You do have 18 months to file internationally, so you can get it started here and then see where there's interest. Sometimes companies will want to extend that patent around the world. They'll help pay for it, but it's extraordinarily expensive for you as an individual to go out and do it. Yeah. And quite frankly, filing in a lot of these countries And you can do it strategically, like you could file in Germany and that will get you started in the whole EU and that sort of thing. But really, it only gives you a right to fight out the patent battles in those countries.
I'll tell you, it was funny this morning at breakfast with my wife, and I told her that I would be speaking with you today. And I said, you know, for years, I always had this thought of, which I thought I might have missed out on. So basically, you know, you're in public restrooms or you're in schools, kind of an invention where you just have to use your foot pedal, like kind of like the trash bins, and the toilet seat opens. But then my wife's like, that exists already. I probably missed out on that one.
So let's just take that as an example. So let's just say that is your idea. This is what you have to vet. First of all, what else is out there? So you can do your patent search at the U.S. Patent Office, and you're going to find 150 patents out there on things that are similar. So then does yours do it better? It's a better horseshoe, and then in which case it might still be worth pursuing. But then you got to think a little bit about your path to market. Let's say you want to install it in public restrooms. Well, now you're into a commercial sector, and there's a certain distribution channel and companies that dominate those, and you're going to have to learn everything you can about that industry, as opposed to, say, for home use and all that. So you have a good idea there, and then you just have to vet it and see where it goes. Do a lot of research.
I know we mentioned a couple of times your new book, Inventor Confidential. Maybe a few kind of gems that you have stick out for you. You think the listener would appreciate?
Well, I spend the first half of the book really talking about product development, about how to fine tune your idea into something, how to build prototypes. I talk about the patent system, how to protect it so it's your property properly. I also talk about going to market directly and what I call the 30 steps, so that you understand the fundamentals of what's involved if you're moving ahead here. But the second half of my book, Moshe, is I have a section called Beware, B-E-W-A-R-E, and that's where I talk about these folks that sort of prey on inventors. And by the way, they come in different sizes and colors, and some of them are very slick. I also talk about some of the problems that we have today with the patent system and some of the big tech companies that are trying to upend the patent system and make it less relevant today, which I think is a big mistake. So I talk about a number of things that inventors need to be aware of. And then I have another section, the next section called Be, separate word, Aware, A-W-A-R-E. And there I talk about things like Kickstarter, trade shows, and other things that they may not be familiar with to make them more familiar. And then I go on to talk about organic innovation and why it's so important at grassroots in our country and why we need to support it and what everybody can do in America to make us more innovative.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Warren. How could people contact you or get your book?
Well, thanks for asking. So the book website is inventorconfidential.com. So please go on there, and it's also available on Amazon, and we'd love you to leave reviews. My website is tuttleinnovation.com, very easy. So you can go on tuttleinnovation.com, find out everything about me, how to contact me, and send me an email. My email directly is www.tuttle@yahoo.com. And I may not get back to you the same day, but I always get back within a couple of days.
Well, thank you so much, Warren. Thank you.
Thanks, Moshe. Glad to be here.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Join me next week when my guest will be Ezra Frech, an American Paralympic athlete. Ezra was born without most of his left leg, but that hasn't slowed him down. In fact, he was a junior high jump world champion and will represent the U.S. at the upcoming Tokyo Olympics. Ezra is also the founder of Angel City Sports for kids, adults, and veterans with disabilities. His inspiring story comes your way next week. Until then, have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.